everybody. Welcome to the Mind of a Skeptical Leftist. This week, I am talking to my friend X from the Utah Outcasts podcast. He has been podcasting for quite a long time. We knew each other back in the atheist activism days. The Utah Outcasts has been running, I think, since 2013, 2012, somewhere in there. So X has been in the atheist podcasting scene for a very long time, and that's always kind of intersected with politics and social justice. And as time moved on, social justice and left-wing politics became a bigger focus of the show and bigger focus of the project of the Utah Outcasts. I've interviewed Felicia previously on this show. She is also a member of the Utah Outcasts crew. So I'm not going to do a conservative cancel culture this time around. I was going to do something on that Montero by Lil Nas X and the shoes that were quote unquote filled with blood. And there was a little bit of blood injected into the airbags of these Nike shoes, and the Nike swoosh was changed so that it wasn't the Nike swoosh or whatever. And right now the shoe company is getting sued. Lil Nas X is getting, people are pissed off at him. The conservatives have tried very, very hard to cancel this young man, despite the fact that they hate cancel culture. Just because he gave the devil a lap dance in his music video while singing a song. Whatever, I guess. But I didn't want to really talk about that too much. It's not something that I've done a lot of work on. I'd like to, you know, if I could, spend 10 minutes discussing it with some quotes from bullshit pundits, because that seems to be the thrust of the conservative cancel culture, is that it's these pundits and politicians telling their constituents and their fans what to be outraged about, and then that outrage being pushed forward. And I mean, that is why they push against cancel culture, right? Because they believe that they believe it's the same thing. They're canceling somebody because they're following what they're told. And a bunch of, like, and the rest of us, when we stop buying a book because somebody's a transphobe, or we stop buying music because somebody's a right-wing troll, that's considered cancel culture. When Dr. Seuss stops publishing books because they have racist imagery, that's cancel culture. When they actively go out and try to destroy the career of a burgeoning young artist because he happens to be black and gay, that's not cancel culture somehow. So you know, I don't want to spend a whole bunch of time on this right today. Maybe another day I'll have more time for it. But for now, I do want to talk about this idea that the right, conservatives, Republicans, always push forward this idea that the left is coming to take their guns and kill their babies and plunge the world into communism and socialism. And while there is some debate on the left about guns, and there's some pretty hardcore leftists who are like pro-gun because it's part of the issue with a revolution, right? Like, you almost need to be armed to defend yourself against a police state. Not that you have much chance necessarily of surviving if they target you, but your chances dramatically increase if you have firepower as well. I mean, at least that's the way it's been presented to me. I'm not a person who likes guns, but people need to hunt and stuff, and we'll all need to figure that out for ourselves and balance that for ourselves. As far as killing their babies, nobody's killing any babies. We just want women to have the right to choose to have an abortion on their own. But of course they have to frame it that way. The one I want to focus on a little bit is this idea that we want to plunge the world into anarchy or communism, or, we have to, We want to bring about a socialist revolution. And you're absolutely right. That is what we want to do. We want a socialist revolution. I personally want anarchy. I want a stateless, moneyless, classless society where we all do the work that's needed to help our society exist, but also we all have our needs met. We don't have to worry about survival, and we can try to find fulfillment in other ways because our work days aren't limited to spending them in this shitty factory or at a shitty work site or dealing with shitty customers for, pennies compared to what our bosses are making. That's what I want. I want socialism, and I want communism, and I want anarchy. This is all stuff that I want. So the truth about the left is that the right, the far right, whatever they're saying, the center right, the Tucker Carlsons, the Sean Hannitys of the world, their opinion where they want us to stop. Imagine us as wanting to destroy gender. Yes, I want to destroy gender. That's a good idea. they imagine us as wanting to destroy money and take down big business. And yes, that's absolutely what we want to do. We want to take your house. No, we do want to take those extra houses that you have that aren't being used, or we want to take the houses that you're renting to other people and we want to give them to people for free. We do want to do that. I do anyway, but I think that's a good thing. So sometimes in the past, I've argued against this idea that the left, as they imagine it, is this evil thing that wants to do all these evil communist things. But the trouble is that the things that we want to do, these communist things, they're good things. We want to help people. We want to lift people out of poverty. We want to give everybody the basic necessities they need. We don't want a group of elite people gathering and hoarding wealth while the rest of us suffer and have to struggle to survive. The world is fucked up right now. I mean, it's always been kind of fucked up, but the differences are stark and clear right now. And a lot of people are seeing it. And I think for all the social media harm that social media has done, it's also been a good thing because it helps us to communicate with other people who are on the political left, who have a similar project with us and who can help us all do better. And maybe we can actually move things forward. I mean, I know there's debate, right, about various types of things, ways to do this. And there's debate among people about the end goal. And these are all things that we can discuss at various times. But the fact is, we do have a much broader and much larger left presence in the world now than there has been in as long as I can remember. It used to be that if you said I was a socialist, well, people would actually write you off. Like when I'm thinking in the early 2000s, we started having, it was post 9/11, but we started having some economic issues. In, I guess it was 2008, the housing crash came about. People noticed then, and that's about the time that a lot of other online groups were starting to communicate with each other. The Occupy movement was a huge boon to changing me from waking me up from my conservative slumber, I guess you could say. Like I think of it in terms of my own evolution. And in 2008, I saw people sitting and in the, I saw people sitting and camping in tents and in cities across the world, in cities, including the city of Regina that I currently live in. People were camping in solidarity with those who were trying to change the system as it was. I mean, there were issues with the Occupy movement, of course, as there is with any movement, but where am I going with this? Rather than worry about where I'm going with this, I'm just going to say, yes, sometimes it's not a straw man. The right uses it as a threat to the status quo. What we need to do is somehow convince people that the status quo is not helping them. that the status quo is bad, it is broken, and it can continue to harm them and make it harder for them to live. Governments who care about spending and austerity, instead of helping people, they spend trillions or billions on military. The police get billions of dollars a year in countries where people are still starving and have no homes. And yes, I'm even just speaking of first world, quote unquote, first world countries, rich countries, basically, is what I'm saying. Not first world, because fuck that hierarchy bullshit. But it's a world like North America has a dramatically different understanding of what the status quo is like than Africa. I can't speak to the issues in South America, right? But I can say that if people across the world want to unite, this is, I think, the time to do it. And I think that we can change our countries to be better. And I think that that scares the right, because they want to imagine us as weak, as a fringe group. And yeah, I said it before, there are internal debates going on. There are discussions and disagreements about the end goal or strategy. But if we all band together on some level, and at least we're recognizing that there's a problem with the status quo. And I mean, none of this is to forget that climate change is just like this big sword over our head that's going to drop at any moment. Like, it's not, I guess not at any moment, but like, we literally know we have a deadline. We have to get things figured out soon, and we have to do something. What that something is, I don't have that answer right now, but hopefully within the next few months or weeks or whatever, I can speak to some people who have better ideas than I do, and I can maybe help get those messages out. With that said, that was a bit of a long ramble. I didn't really mean for it to be quite that long, but here's my interview with X from the Utah Outcasts. As with the format based on the last episode, I'm going to cut this off at some point and then publish just the long form version for patrons or people who email me at mindofaskepticalleftist@gmail.com to say that they would like the full version. You can get that through audio, or I will send you a link to the private video so that you can watch the video. Besides that, I hope you enjoy this interview, and there's going to be another book review at the end with Justin Clark reviewing Breaking the Spell by Daniel Dennett. Hi, and welcome to The Mind of a Skeptical Leftist, the podcast where I discuss progressive politics, left-wing philosophy, and critical thinking with a variety of people. Today I'm joined by Outcast X from the Utah Outcasts podcast and YouTube show. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you, man. Thanks for having me.
It's been a long time since we chatted.
Oh, man. I think the last time I interviewed you, and it was only like a 20-minute interview, and it was like three goddamn years ago. God.
Yeah.
It's wow, time be at flies. Least that long.
Oh, yeah. I mean, especially 2020 was like just bizarre, right?
Yeah. I think the last time we did it, you were still working the job that you're doing now that you'd left. So.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
That's a lifetime ago.
Exactly. Yeah. So I guess for people that might not know who you are.
How dare you? No, I'm kidding. No.
Why don't you give us a rundown of who you are and what is your political identity?
Okay. My name is X. I go by that only because I've run afoul of Proud Boys one too many times, and I don't want people to really know who the hell I am on the internet, because I actually have a job that might not like some of my views sometimes, so I kind of have to go incognito. I mean, it's not hard to find out who I am. It's just that people that want to put in work, and Proud Boys aren't the kind that usually want to do that kind of work. So,
right.
So I am the host, producer, whatever other title I can give myself for of the Utah Outcast, one of the three co-hosts of the show that we do there. I'm joined by my co-host Felicia and Kyle. Felicia is the staunchest anarchist that we have on the panel. Kyle and myself have to be careful with what we announce ourselves as, because, like I said, we have day jobs that if they found out we said something like that, they might not like it too much. But I am leaning communist. social democracy. I am very much a socialist for goddamn sure. But, you know, you can't really come out and say I'm a communist working for the people that I work with. So,
right, right. Yeah, it's
I'm very much pro labor, very much give the people what they need to survive, social safety nets. I want all of the people that inhabit a country that decide to have a government to benefit from the government. They should be taking care of people's well-being. And I think that billionaires shouldn't exist. Neither should multimillionaires exist, because you get to be a certain point of wealth and it doesn't mean a goddamn thing anymore to anybody except yourself. So
yeah, that's right. It's just a score game at that point, right?
And at that point, like your following generations of whoever you're going to have will be able to live off of that for multitudes of generations. And
yeah, that's right.
Not saying I want to deprive anybody of their wealth, but I don't think you've earned it for the most part.
let's take that wealth and let's distribute it.
Well, I mean, how dare people over billionaires say that I made this money? No, you kind of stole that money from the people that made you rich, to begin with.
You absolutely did not do enough work to earn $1 billion.
No, and you have CEO pay that's 300 times what other people's normal benefits would be. And on top of that, you give them bonuses of money that it would pay 20-something people enough money to live the rest of their lives off of, you know?
Yeah, that's right.
It's obscene. It's absolutely obscene that I live in the richest nation on the planet, and yet we still have a homeless problem, feeding people problem, and we still have housing problems. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah, I do another show with a guy who, he is still a capitalist.
Yeah.
Even, like, when he breaks it down for me, he's like, even those CEOs that get like $300 million and they're making thousands of times what their average employee makes, even they will not be billionaires by the time they die. Like, and I mean, Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk are on their way to being trillionaires. Like, like it's not a thing that makes any sense.
At that point, just you should just say, okay, money's no longer going to you. You can afford whatever you want. Let's put this back into the system, and you come to dad and you say, I want a pony. We'll get you a pony. We want a house. We'll buy you a house. That's fine. We'll get you a house. Just let's take that obscene hoard of wealth and put it to actual use instead of having it sit in a bank. And then you'll get the people that are like, but if it's not just sitting in the bank, it's being used by the bank to, I don't know, make people buy mortgages. Yeah.
It's being used by the bank to buy stocks in companies and then creating more money. This is why it's all fake, right?
It's all completely fake.
Yes, the bank is using the money that they created to do something.
We don't know what, but it is doing something with the money. So the show that we do is we started out as like an atheist content show. And we do talk a lot about the religious right in this country because you can't separate them from the Republicans anymore.
No.
We've also touched on the subject of like QAnon. We pretty much go after anybody that's a crazy conspiracy theorist, and YouTube took notice of it and they don't really like us there anymore because they don't know how to distinguish between being critical of an idea and sharing the idea. So it's been fun times with that one, but we've been doing the show for about 6 years and we talk about class inequality every once in a while. We Felicia will turn everything to communism, do fist raised in the air, you know, power to the people stuff. And I love her for it. And it's a fun show. We do probably about, it's like a 90-minute podcast every week, but for people that are patrons and stuff, we put out a lot more content. So I very much want to have a community and not just a show. And so I don't really care what platform I'm on as long as people are able to catch it. So
yeah, that's right. The thing about YouTube is it's just the most, the easiest and most accessible, right?
Yeah. Well, thankfully I do. We have enough people that support us on Patreon that I was able to get a pretty decent license for using Vimeo.
Oh, nice.
Because anything you upload there, you have a certain like cap that you can't upload anymore. And luckily I'm going to start migrating everything to that because just in case YouTube decides to go yoink and pull our cord, yeah. I would like to be able, I've got everything backed up. So thankfully I'm good there, but.
Right. Yeah. You've been doing shows for a long time though. So yeah. It's a lot of stuff.
Oh yeah. Over 2000 things we put out on YouTube. And so it's just one of those things where at an overabundance of caution, I want to make sure I have a backup of other stuff somewhere else because we're entertaining. It's fun to watch. And I personally look at some of the stuff, go back and see some of the older clips, and I'm like, ah, history. You know, we were there talking about this when this happened, and, you know, what kind of state of mind were we in? And in the future, I would love for my kids to be able to trip across whatever I have and watch the stuff and be like, wow, that was my dad. He never talked about any of this stuff at home, you know?
Right, right. Yeah, it's we kind of did that with Brainstorm a little bit. Like, we had, you know, a variety of topics and whatever.
Yeah.
But
yeah, and it's kind of hard to narrow things down when you're just a bunch of friends that want to get together and talk about stuff. So, I mean, we will touch on pop culture. We'll talk about, we talk about cheese a lot because we're bougie.
Sure, that's fair.
And of course, we have booze every once in a while. It's just a good time hanging out with three friends that enjoy each other's company and like talking about complicated topics and honestly listening to each other's viewpoints and trying our best not to be a dick to each other. So it's kind of a weird sell, but if you enjoy bar talk, not right. Like dude bro bar talk, but like you're going to get yourself a corner table somewhere and it's just going to be fixing all of the world's problems at the bar. Yeah. That's our show.
Yeah, it's not like on Facebook where everything turns toxic right away. Like you're talking to somebody in person, you're being respectful of their opinions and they're being respectful of yours. And even if you disagree, you're still friends, right?
Yep. And we don't platform anybody that we don't like or agree with. So because, you know, it's an amazing concept. You can own your own platform, guys. You can absolutely not have Nazis on your show. It's not hard.
Yeah, you don't have to. It's not infringing on their free speech if you don't have boogaloo boys on your fucking show.
Oh, and I love their little tap dance of whole. Well, we're actually anarchists. Like, no, you're not. Come on. I've seen what you guys have posted.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, anarcho-capitalists still think they're anarchists, right?
Fucking ANCAPs. How do they exist? God.
I don't know. Because they just hate the government. They just hate paying taxes. That's all it is.
Well, I was reading somebody earlier today on Twitter. They were talking about how was it getting rid of government regulation. It was essentially your typical libertarian dude bro that was out there talking about stuff. And if you remove government from it, business will regulate itself. And I'm just like, in what world do you live in where business regulates itself? Any corner that they can cut and get away with without actually having to go to like getting in trouble for it, they're going to cut it. You know?
Yeah.
It's Amazon. Always, God damn it.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. They will always maximize profits. They have to. That's what they do.
Capitalism is. That's what corporations do. They are a machine for making money.
Yeah. If you don't have some rules stopping them from doing things, they will just do them if they make the money. That there's no stopping that.
Yeah. I mean, we've been a show for a long time, and I've thought about and bandied around the idea of us becoming a business only because we live in a society where you have to play by their stupid rules. You know?
Yeah, that's right. We live in the system we are in.
we kind of have to if you want to take those next steps and, you know, being able to have tax breaks and stuff because you are chipping into the commerce industry. So, you know,
yeah.
Oh, it's weird, man. It's weird trying to play by the rules and at the same time trying to change them at the same time. I'm definitely not in the camp of being an accelerationist or anything like that. It's just, I hope that we get more and more progressive, thinkers in office that actually push the old fucks out, but
right, right.
And not saying old is bad. I'm just saying the old guard. The old guard, I should say. So.
Yeah. Sorry.
Because our politics is a goddamn mess, man.
Okay, so I guess before we started, you were telling me a story about Twitter.
Okay, first of all, there's not enough nuance that you can have on Twitter. I mean, the character count itself just I made a post because I saw some dumbass out there that was talking about how Biden is doing so well compared to Trump.
Okay.
And I'm like, okay, cool. Here's the quote, right? Here's the tweet that I sent out and said, hey, if your bar for Biden is, quote, at least he's better than Trump, unquote, you have been duped into thinking the bare minimum is amazing. He's done some good things in his first 3 months, but please have higher standards of judging presidents. This is my quote. And I included a GIF of Odorous Arungus from GWAR hopefully people wouldn't take me really fucking serious.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Usually people don't put guar gifts into their comments that they want to take, want people to take them seriously. So
no, that's right.
Somebody said, are you saying that America was once again duped into choosing the best of two evils? And there still wasn't a right answer. Perish the thought. No, it's not what I'm saying. It's like, we had a choice between a fascist and status quo, and we went with status quo because presidents should be at least doing what Biden does and giving a shit about the people.
No. Yeah, right.
But no, the people in this country have been duped into GOP, let's do fucking nothing and blow up foreign countries, or let's do a little bit and blow up foreign countries. You know?
Yeah, that's right. Like, I got a bunch of shit once because Biden, he like announced on some video that he was not going to cancel the $50,000 worth of student debt that he could technically do
easily
per person. I mean, like,
well, yeah. Because it is a federal loan program. That means he's the fucking executive branch. He's the CEO of the country. He with the stroke of a pen go executive order. All this is gone.
Yep.
But he chooses not to.
And he said straight up, I'm not doing that. And I said, well, this is trash. This is a trash idea from him. Like, he absolutely is being trashy if he's not doing this. And, you know, like I say, you get the liberals who are like, you got to stop criticizing Biden. It's too early or whatever it was. Like,
no, the thing is, you can criticize somebody on their first day of work.
Yeah,
right. You honestly should, because they won't do better unless you're criticizing them. I'm sure you've had the new employee at your job, a greenie, and on their first day, they are going to make all kinds of fuck ups.
Yep.
And unless you called them on that.
Yeah, you have to be able to say, no, that's actually not how we do that. This is how we do that.
Like, you're going to lose a finger doing it that way. Don't do that. You know,
don't. Yeah.
And so it's just the audacity of people that think that you can't hold a new president to task when at the same time, the very first week of Trump being president and him getting executive orders against allowing Muslim people to travel the United States, people were up in arms and going against them. The same people are saying that you can't judge a president at his first like couple of months. We're judging the other president by his first couple of months. There's a fucking double standard here, guys. If you're not going to treat every president the same way, and that's what—that's the other thing I don't get, is people treat their elected officials, their politicians, as if they are like rock stars or celebrities and stuff. And it's like, yes, they are a famous person, but they're famous because you put them there.
Yeah.
And they better fucking listen to their bosses. You know?
Like... Okay, so I'm not a fan of people who like go around defending their favorite YouTuber or podcaster. You know,
we're all trash.
We're all trash. Everybody fucks up, right?
Yeah.
So you extend that, like, okay, so that's one with zero consequences, right? Like this is a YouTuber. No, who gives a shit? And just you get more and more famous. And people are supposed to be like more and more like critical. Because they have more power. The more power they have, the bigger influence they are. You have to be more critical of them, not less.
So I don't get how there are certain people that made a market for themselves, like on YouTube. And this is not going to be like scolding the anti-wokes or anything like that. But there are a lot of people out there that have over the years, after they've gained their audience by putting out like anti-SJW content. And I used to watch that shit. I was a shitlord just like most other guys in the mid 2010s or something like that. It was right. When YouTube atheism was on the rise. And so it led to, you know, talking about feminism and all this other shit that everybody had opinions about because Gamergate was a thing, apparently. There are people that have evolved since starting that content. And there's a lot of people out there that are unwilling to listen to them now because they knew what they were then.
Right. Right.
And they're on your side now. They've changed their stripes. They've become better people. And you could be cynical and say, well, they're doing it because that's where the money is now. And I could point to folks like Thought Slime, and I could point to, you know, what's the one I'm thinking of? The Non-Compete, where it's like, they're not making a ton of money off of doing this kind of stuff, guys. No. It's not like this is a popular idea. Corporations absolutely hate it when you want people to unionize. And
yeah, that's right. They don't. They don't like the alternative worldviews per se.
Yeah, I mean, it shouldn't be an alternative worldview. That's the most fucked up thing. It's like I'm constantly watching media where you're supposed to be. Just take for instance, a video game came out recently, Cyberpunk 2077.
Right.
The main character in the game that you play, the avatar that you are, has another character that you interact with on the regular, who was just a giant fucking anarchist. Not like anarchism, like, you know, a fan of the non-government agencies and stuff like that, but he literally wanted to destroy a corporation by nuking the building. And so, mini nuke, you know. Not a big one.
not a full-blown nuke.
No, but like the thing is, like, they put this character in the game where you're supposed to be like listening to him and hearing from him and saying, "Oh man, that guy's an extremist. I don't think I like his ideas." But from the outset, I'm listening to him, I'm like, "Dude's making a lot of sense."
Actually, he's not wrong. Maybe the things he wants to do are a little bit extreme.
That's a bit extreme how he got there, and he's going to harm people. But who's to say that? Because it is a dystopian future where that corporation essentially is the government, and so it's it's corporatism in that universe, and so it's
that's the ANCAP future. That's the one they want. Is the corporations will run everything.
Yep, private security firms, even though they call themselves the police, you know.
Yep.
They take money from corporations to give them better response rates. You have corporate security that has the more, if not the same law and law taking away abilities as courts do, and like regular police do. It's a hellhole, man. And everybody's like, "Oh, it's cool." I'm like, "No, I would absolutely hate living in this time."
Yeah, no, that's not cool.
No, Jesus, there's it. I don't get it. It's like, I think you should be okay with having more people on your side of arguments instead of, you know, asking for purity of thought for everything. You know, to be honest, if there's somebody that harbors like anti-trans, anti-LGBT, you know, anything that I'm very much against somebody having those opinions, I'm not going to welcome them into my side. But at the same time, if they may have expressed shit like that in the past, and they've sincerely apologized and they're trying to work towards making themselves a better person, I choose to believe them. I'm not as cynical as not to believe them, because I was one of those people that was a shitlord. I just wasn't vocal about it on YouTube. I just, you know, kept it all up here into myself.
Yeah.
But I finally reached a stage where I grew the fuck up, you know? And so
I think it's, you know, you give people a little bit of rope, right? You give them chances. You give them the opportunity to prove themselves in various ways. You don't, but also, I guess, like, that's coming from my privileged perspective. Like, obviously, a marginalized person doesn't owe a content creator a second chance, right?
Absolutely not. No, that's the thing. It's like, and the thing is, like, the only reason I'm bringing this up is because there are people that have tried to become better than they once were. But at the same time, it's just like, oh, that's just more of the same shit from these kind of people, just in a different, like, the mouthwash is on the other side now. And it's like, can't we do better? Can't we get better content creators out there?
It would be good if you could get some genuine people who believe in good things out there doing work.
You know. Propping other people up, making other people feel good about what they're doing in their life. No.
Yeah.
No, instead we still have shock jocks like Steven Crowder, and we still have, we still have mega church pastors that are some of the biggest channels on YouTube. And it's just like, I guess you guys are fine just wanting to feel shitty about yourself as long as you're picking on somebody else that's more marginalized than you are, you know?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And I mean, obviously they like the right, they like to play the victim a lot too.
Oh yeah. We're the victim here. We're like, oh God, Laura Loomer had a story that just came video that just came out this last week. And I don't normally pay attention to her, but she showed up on Right Wing Watch and she was talking about, she wants to get a, Holocaust style tattoo, like on her wrist. What? of her docket number that she got for, you know, shackling herself to Twitter. You remember she pulled that stupid stunt where she,
yep. Yeah,
because her account got canceled. And they took her away. They deplatformed her. And so she's trying to say that there is a digital Shoah going on right now, and I'm like, fuck me.
How long ago was that, though? Like, it's not new.
Yeah, I don't understand how. Okay. In my life, like the whole YouTube thing going on right now, where we got demonetized and stuff, and I'm not angry about the whole thing. I honestly never made much off of YouTube anyway, but it's just a way of getting your stuff out there on the platform.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like life threw an obstacle in my way, and I was like, okay, well that sucks. I'm gonna go this way now, you know, or I'm gonna change what I do and do this instead.
Yeah.
I'm not going to sit here and just be mad about it for like 2.5 years and then yeah, talk about how I'm going to hoist myself up on this cross and nail myself in because I'm not allowed to make the tweets anymore.
Yeah. Like, you're going to get your Holocaust style tattoo of your YouTube channel file number or whatever. Like, come on.
It's like, okay, you know, you can, if you really needed to, Laura, you guys love capitalism so much, you can start your own. You can start your own platform. I know. Let's go back to PHP BB bulletin boards, and yeah, you can have your own forum. There you go. You know, it's just like Facebook.
Yeah, that's right.
these people, goddammit.
Yeah, it's funny stuff. They like... Oh, you even see it, although I guess Ta-Nehisi Coates kind of did target Jordan Peterson in a way.
He deserved it, though.
But he's like...
That's such good trolling. That's so good. And you got like people with like a Red Skull fan accounts on Twitter coming out and going, I do not approve this. I don't think you should. Jordan Lee Peterson does not represent my beliefs.
Yeah,
he doesn't talk like Skeletor. What the hell am I doing?
Good enough.
Yeah, good enough. No, we talked about this on Utah Outcast when we recorded last night. It's like, if you find yourself agreeing with Red Skull, who was too fucking racist and crazy for the Nazis. Hydra was too much of a authoritarian fascist group for the Nazis. They wanted to get rid of him too. So if you're okay with Red Skull now, that means that you've gone past fash and you've gone into like ultra fash.
Yeah, that's right.
God damn it.
Yeah, pretty ridiculous. I'm a little annoyed that Peterson even has a platform again. Like, after all that shit, and
I'm
now
surprised he has brain functions right now because he was in that coma for so long.
Yeah,
and it was all to get off of being addicted to benzies, and so it's like you could have just gone through like the usual programs to get off of drugs, right? You are a doctor, you know this, right? Yeah, sorry, he's a doctor of psychology, which means he should understand addictive personalities, and he should understand how you can wean yourself off of things like that, but.
Yeah. You'd think
I guess putting me into a coma is a better idea. I want to lose some weight. Well, I better put myself into a coma.
pretty sure that all meat diet isn't exactly making his brain function better.
Oh, God.
So
he had a picture from his birthday a couple weeks ago, and it was him with a candle and a fucking steak in front of him.
Jeez.
I was like, what are you doing, man? This is so unhealthy. And the daughter's fine with it. She's like, I hope he dies. I want his money.
Well, yeah, that's right. Like, well,
she's trying to get
promoting
her platform
it,
up and everything, too. So. She's the one that pushed the whole, like, whole meat diet thing. Yeah. And
it's bizarre. She has no qualifications at all for that.
Yeah. She's not a dietitian or anything. And I unfortunately heard him on the Dark Horse podcast, which is the Brett Weinstein show that he has. And
oh, yeah.
Guys, I watch this stuff so you don't have to, or listen to this stuff so you don't have to, because honestly, it's entertaining to me to hear what the people that have these beliefs are saying about stuff. And he was going on this like anti-doctor, anti-hospital tirade, and again, falsely claiming that COVID was released by China from a Wuhan weapon lab. And I'm just, Jesus Christ.
Despite all evidence to the contrary.
Well, and I also saw like a article before I even got on here where they were talking about how China needs to answer more questions about how COVID started. Like, in what world do you hold another country responsible for a natural pandemic? You know?
Yeah.
It could have been, guys, in America, it could have been stopped if you would have, you know, corrected your president a little bit more instead
follow
of just letting
guidelines.
Him.
Yeah.
You know, just like that new guy on the job. If you would to correct him for the shit that he was doing, maybe we wouldn't have lost 500,000 people.
There's like a theme here, right? Like,
right.
Hold. Like you're allowed to criticize politicians.
And you should, vocally and vociferously, you know. I don't agree with going to the Capitol and busting down the fucking doors and, you know, going into the halls of Congress when you weren't invited to be there, because that's a no-no. That is a actual federal crime. But at the same time, you need to go visit them when they have office hours. You need to hold them accountable to the stuff that they do. The only problem is they're typically not going to listen to you because you don't have the money.
Yeah, that's right.
And until we get money out of our politics, we're not going to see much of a change at all. But that's,
you have to have, like,
that's me being cynical again.
You almost have to have massive numbers of people communicating with your politicians about various things so that they know where their constituents lie. Yeah. Instead of just going with the money. But
well, and as we learned, you can't shame anybody in the GOP to doing the right thing anymore, because
right.
they absolutely are not listening to constituents at all anymore. I personally helped fill up voicemail mailboxes for every one of my elected officials in this state. And I live in Utah, so it's a very red leaning, like hard red leaning state because of the LDS church that's here. And everybody that's a major elected official, their voicemail boxes were full. They weren't listening to anything we had to say anymore.
Yeah. This is a fundamental problem with like the party type politics.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's, I mean, maybe you could come up with a good way to do representative politics without parties. But as long as you have parties, you're stuck with this team mentality. And as soon as you have those teams, then people just don't think. They just pick their team and they win, you know, they win and lose. And it doesn't matter what's going on.
Yep. They pick R's and D's. And the same person that was correcting me about my saying something about Biden, they were talking about how their governor of their state is actually someone that lives in D.C. So they caucus with Virginia, I believe, is where they can get their elected officials from. And they had on, was it their governor? Yeah, it must have been the governor, is a Republican guy, but he's actually doing well for the people of that state. And it's like,
okay.
Huh, imagine that. You can have somebody that actually gives a shit about the people in your state and not be beholden to the party that they belong to. But you
go figure, hey?
Go figure, right? You know, you can have a higher level of, you know, giving a shit about things besides what's next to your name. Unfortunately, a lot of the cynical assholes like Gates and stuff, they're just going to keep holding on to power, and they're not going to be held accountable for a lot of shit because they have the R next to their name. And when it comes time for the next midterm to happen in 2022 in this country, people are going to forget about Ted Cruz going to Cancun for a vacation during the time where his state was freezing over and people were dying. Nobody's going to care about Matt Gaetz paying through Venmo for, you know, underage sex trafficking. Nobody, they're not going to care, man.
Although he might go to jail, right?
I hope.
Like sex trafficking underage girls is probably not good. Like that should probably send him to jail.
One thing I can give a little bit of credit to the people that follow the right. If they actually were listening to if the news programs were actually more than just Fox News and whatever drive time radio they might be listening to, the people that are usually conservatives, they do a pretty good job of holding kid touchers accountable a lot of the time. I mean, you had you remember Mayo Yiannopoulos was a thing there for a while.
Yeah.
and he essentially got uninvited to being a conservative fun bag anymore. After he started talking about how he enjoyed the fact that he got like his priest did something to him, I think, or
right. Yeah,
he was
like
okay
that.
With the pedophilia of a priest that happened to him. And everybody's just like, oh, fuck, that's a bridge too far, man. We can't follow you on that one. And so hopefully with Matt Gaetz, if he finally comes out and has some stuff where he can't, you know, sidestep it or get away from it, hopefully it'll be something where it's going to be a bridge too far for some people, especially for people in Florida. But
yeah, hopefully,
because Florida's kind of red, but it's not nearly as bad as like Utah is like this. But the funny thing is, like, we're getting encroached upon around all sides by other states that are more progressive. And so it's like as the time goes on, it's going to be something where we're going to have to change. We're going to have to, you know, follow what the rest of the world is doing. Like, we had really conservative, like, liquor laws in the state, because we have to buy your hard liquors and stuff through the state stores, which is stupid because they charge a markup for it. But at the same time, I've been to other states where it's even more drastic, and they're Republican controlled as well. Like, there are still some states in this country that have dry counties. Like, you cannot buy booze at all in that county.
It's bizarre.
How? You know, can we get a federal rule?
Yeah, it makes no sense.
I don't understand people's holding on as hard as they possibly can to, like, the being independent states within a federal government. I don't like the republic part of it. We should have one set of rules that pertains to everybody across the entire United States, but...
Yeah. I mean, I guess I get that it's kind of tough because there are different issues in different places with different, you know, land masses and whatever. And now it's already too late, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's not going to be changing. States, the whole states' rights crowd isn't going anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. And now they've already created, like, almost little independent countries that have their own issues and their own problems and, and situations that, you know, it would be a lot of work for a federal agency to just take care of these things. But
yeah, I mean, it's you guys run into it as well. I mean, but you have much less territories than we have states there. So
yeah,
but you also have what's the population of Canada right now? Isn't it
it's around 33 million?
So about a tenth of what we have then. Yeah, so it's probably easier to manage your guys' population.
I would think so. Yeah.
Unlike here, where you have, you know, the majority of people living on coastal states and, you know, giant cities, yet the land seems to have more voting than the people.
what we're running into right now with the vaccinations is that despite having a universal healthcare system, each province is in charge of their healthcare, right? So then it's been like vaccines are distributed to the province, and then the provinces are in charge of distributing to the people. Mm-hmm. And it's like, that's part of why our patchwork system, it's kind of been, we've had worse results than the US as far as vaccinations. So
yeah, weirdly enough, like here in Utah, even though we are very conservative and there's a ton of anti-vax people here, there's a lot of people that have the alternative health beliefs here because multi-level marketing is a huge draw for Utah. We have a lot of businesses where that's how they make their money. And a lot of them are very much anti-vaccination, and people don't want to get the vaccinations and they don't trust it, and there's chemicals in it. And I'm like, there's chemicals in everything, but But we've actually had a pretty good rollout in this state. Like, it all has to do with how your government is set up, like, within the state. Like, we have a governor that is fairly young compared to the guy who was running it last. And he tends to, even though he's Republican, he tends to actually give a shit about the people of the state. And that's, I think, the biggest draw for a lot of places is, like, does your government honestly care for you?
Yeah, that's right.
But we've had a pretty good rollout. I mean, hell, the governor made it so that even I could get my vaccine, even though I wasn't any kind of like a health risk factor. But it was one of those things where if you have a BMI of over a certain amount, you could get your vaccine. And I'm like, wow, that's really forward thinking. I'm going to go get mine today.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, currently.
It's the first time being fat actually worked in my favor. So.
Well. It's got to work sometimes, right?
Right.
Okay, so it's 35, 40 minutes in almost. Do you have anything that you would like to talk about for counter-propaganda?
Let's see. What is your idea of propaganda, though? That's where I guess where I have to come at with this one. Because,
okay, so...
Because we could go Fox News and counter Fox News. There is no such thing. Because there's... MSNBC is still yet another tool of the state, you know?
Yeah, that's true. Like, I mean, even that, like, count propaganda is a common myth or something that is pushed by the mainstream media or by some... influencer or influential source that is, it's just wrong, right?
Yeah.
Or it's intended to mislead.
So in our state, we happen to be one of the groups that one of the states that just got rid of their mask mandate, state ran mask mandate as of yesterday. And that puts a lot of stress on the actual, like, businesses and places where they want people to still wear masks. And so now you can no longer point to the sign and say, the governor says we have to do this, or the state says we have to do this. Right. It's now we say you have to do this. And unfortunately, we have a lot of anti-vax people, and we have a lot of people that, honestly, if you didn't have to wear a mask, they wouldn't, and they chest pound about how it's my rights and my freedoms and just... Right. And I see you guys are getting a bit of that out there in Canada, too, because yeah. there's that one church in Alberta that got shut down that I've been following that one pretty closely. So,
OK, yeah, there's been actually a number of like rallies and stuff lately, too, because people don't want to wear masks and oh, my rights and blah, blah, blah. And anti-lockdown. Why are you giving me vaccines? I don't want any of this stuff. it's my right to die of a virus, damn it.
Like, can you just repeat that sentence slower for yourself? You know? Like, this is a drug that makes it so you won't die of this thing.
Yep.
This thing that I'm going to give you, it won't kill you. This thing over here could kill you.
Yeah. But again, I mean, they actively don't believe that the virus is real, or they believe that the vaccine is meant to do something. We're going to go on to foes and comrades. Hmm. Is there some person or group that needs to be called out for being shitty besides the Republicans? Because we've been talking about them already. Or is there somebody who you think a good comrade who needs a boost?
Everybody needs to listen to more Kevin Logan. Kevin Logan's doing a good job on YouTube. Okay. He's got good content out there. He goes into lots of communism talk, lots of Marxism talk. He also brings down the manosphere down a peg or two. He's one of those guys that has had arguments and conversations with Sargon of Akkad and has called him a fucking asshole right to his face, you know, like you should. None of this playing nice and I'm going to make him see the error of his ways. He's like, no, you're a fucking idiot. You know, he's a good guy. My friend Brentley from Unapologetics podcast. He's an up and coming. They've had a podcast for a while. They're an interracial couple that does a podcast out of Florida, and he does the videos on YouTube every once in a while. I apologize. I don't have his name for what his YouTube channel is, but go listen to the Unapologetics podcast. They do a good job, but he has debates where he tries to talk to conservatives that live nearby him.
Okay. And
God, they're hilarious because he's just like, I'm not understanding where you're coming from with that. Do you have any sources? And the guy's like, no, I don't have any sources. So that's just how I feel.
No, you cannot.
And meanwhile, I'm over here in the side chat just throwing bombs at the guy the whole time. I'm like, nice. Ask him about this. Ask him about that. And he's just like, I got it, man. Don't worry.
Nice.
So no, he's a good dude. But as far as foes, Steven Crowder did just recently get in trouble with YouTube for some of the shit that he did. So he's one of the people that I abhor. We cover a guy named Matt Powell. He's a younger.
Oh, now you said his name. He'll wind up watching my stuff.
A younger creationist asshole minister. And we watched a video last night while we were recording the show where he was talking about the myth of transgenderism. And it's just all of us were just like, you're fucking wrong. You're so wrong. And he's like, well, the Bible says. I'm like, dude. And one of my sayings I have on Utah Outcast all the time is fuck your book. Cause I don't care if you have a book that says you could do a thing. That a book is not an authority.
No, that's right.
And I've been dealing with lots of those Christian guys on my solo channel, Outcast X, that I have, because they're coming after me. Like, how do you have morality being a Satanist? And I'm like, easy. Right. I don't harm people.
Yeah, you had one of those posts on your Instagram, and I was
yep.
And it's like, okay, right and wrong don't come from some higher power. Like, they don't come from God. They come from how we treat each other and what we expect. Like, treat people well, and it's you're like, doing good.
If you treat people the way you wished you were to be treated by somebody else that you didn't know, That's pretty much it, you know, and it's stupid that somebody has to write it down in the book that says, this is the golden rule, treat others the way you want to be treated, and that's the way you're going to believe it. But yeah. Also, the people that are Christian, especially the ones that are coming after me, they claim that I don't know, like, the source material. That's true. I haven't read the Bible cover to cover because it's a boring fucking book, man. But at the same time, I know history, and they're coming after me saying, well, you can't have morality without God. And I'm like, well, there was a code of ethics that existed before the Abrahamic gods came into being. Are you trying to say that because they said first, they get to be the ones that are right? You know,
right.
Are you claiming historicity is the reason that you have more morality than somebody else? It's like, okay, well, if somebody wrote it before, you wrote it after, and I'm refining it to this point. Aren't we all right?
Yeah, it's...
Oh, it's stupid. I hate Christian arguments, which is why we don't have them that much, but it's one of those things. So my foe is organized religion. How about that one? You know, religion bad, yo.
That sounds good to me.
I didn't wear my linen shirt. I have a linen shirt where he says religion bad, yo, on it.
Nice. Direct quote, obviously.
Yeah, absolutely. He said those words.
All right. So I love where that can shirt. People find where, in case they can't they don't follow you already, where can people find your stuff?
You can find me at anything with Utah Outcasts, because we have Twitch, where we do our shows every Saturday night. We have YouTube, where you can catch the show after we've recorded it. All of the stuff that we've done that's made it out to the public, like live streams and everything. So YouTube and Twitch are the two big places to catch us. We have our own website, UtahOutcast.com. You can find us at Vimeo.com/UtahOutcast. And if you follow the Twitter account of Twitter.com/UtahOutcast, you get just me. It's me. I run the social media for everything, because I don't want Kyle and Felicia to get dragged into internet fights all the time. And I'm an absurdist, so...
And they do it on their own anyway. So,
like I said, being an absurdist, it's like people come at me with like well-reasoned and thought out ideas and stuff like that. And I'll just post a Hannibal Buress clip and I'm just like, whack. It's like,
yeah, I'm not engaging with you. Fuck.
Like you must seem to misunderstand. We're not on the same level.
Yeah. We're not playing this game.
Yep. So yeah, anything Utah Outcast, and you could also find my YouTube that I do the Outcast X stuff on, which is primarily leaning towards talking about the Christian nationalism is my big target on that one, because they're everywhere, guys, and here in the United States, they want our government to be a theocracy, and they're trying to make it happen as much as they possibly can. So
right.
Yep, find me there.
All right. Well, thank you for joining me.
No, I appreciate it. Thank you. Yeah, I always have fun talking. I love not having to be in the driver's seat. This is great.
Yeah, it's easy, eh? Yeah.
Yep. Oh, well, thanks, everybody.
Okay, that's it for the interview for non-patrons. If you want the rest of that interview, you can become a patron at patreon.com/skepticalleftist. Or you can just email me at mindofaskepticalleftist@gmail.com, and I'll send you the rest of the interview, or the full interview. As for the rest of this episode, up next is the next installment of Red Reviews with Justin Clark. So welcome back to Red Reviews, or... Yeah, because I think I titled it Red Reviews, but then we like bantered a bit about what to call
it. Yeah, I like red reviews. That's cool. That's cool with me. I also like the pun potential there. So you've got red, and then you have I've read. You know.
Yes, that's right.
Red reviews is great. That's perfect. And so. Tonight is, I think I said in the first episode where we talked about Kim Stanley Robinson, that like sometimes these reviews will be fun and they'll be good about yep. books that are good. And sometimes they're going to be about books that are bad. Well, this is a bad one. So tonight we're covering Daniel Dennett's Breaking the Spell, which I don't have a hard copy of anymore.
Okay.
I sold mine back. I periodically take stuff to Half Price Books, which is a local store here. Well, it's a chain, but there's like a local location there, and I sell my stuff back and I get other things. Some books I keep because I like them, and some books I get rid of because I'm like, oh, I read it, I'm good, or I didn't like it, or whatever. So tonight I'll be working mostly with based off of my my essay that I wrote about it, which, you know, so for those who don't know, Daniel Dennett is part of what is called the Four Horsemen of Atheism.
Right.
So he was a part of what has been sort of deemed the new atheist movement, which I don't think they ever explicitly used, but it was used about them and sort of used to describe them. So this is Sam Harris, Christopher Hitchens, Richard Dawkins, and Daniel Dennett, right?
Yeah.
And what kind of
Dennett's the good one, right? Like he's supposed to be the good one.
He's supposed to be the good one. And I would say compared to like someone like Dawkins, who is an open transphobe, or Harris, who is an out and out racist, and Hitchens, who ended up becoming an imperialist toady for power.
He is the good one.
He kind of is the good one. And Breaking the Spell kind of reads that way. It's not nearly as like, it's not nearly as confrontational or condescending, although there is a lot of that in there.
Of course.
So what really inspired this was the book turned 15 years old this year. It was published in 2006. And it's a book very much of its time. What really caused the new atheism to become a thing beyond just all these guys who are all writing books all at the same time? And go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think everybody kind of assumed it was 9/11 kind of brought about the moment, right?
Yeah. I think in my essay, I make the argument that it's not just that, it's two things. So it's that, which is certainly, I think, a huge part of it. And then the other component of it is what they called the evolution wars, which was sort of in the early 2000s where you had this sort of resurgence, the evolution wars, plus the sort of the ascendancy of Christian conservatism in American politics, particularly like the presidency of George W. Bush. And those, I think, were very big influences on the new atheists. Ironically, though, I think the one that stuck more was 9/11, because they have this like singular focus on Islam, like a fetish. And what I sort of make an argument of in my essay is I say that while Dennett's book is certainly more charitable to religion than, say, the other ones, it's nevertheless, it has all of the usual hallmarks of the sort of new atheism, which is incredible condescension, intolerance, arrogance, scientism, which is sort of the idea that the physical sciences are the only real knowledge that exists, and they're the things that are going to get us out of our problems. So it's kind of devoid of politics. It's devoid of history. It's devoid of sociology or anthropology.
It avoids like good philosophy.
Yeah, pretty much. And ultimately, it's kind of hollow, which is kind of what I make an argument of. And so when I sort of tackled the book, my first thing was sort of looking at what did people say about it before? So there were a few reviewers that I went through and sort of read their reviews. So Leon Wesseltier, who wrote for the New York Times, himself not immune from controversy. I mean, he was Me Too'd, I think, 3 or 4 years ago now for being an out-and-out creep, which is true. But I still went and read his review because it was kind of iconic at the time. And it has all the same kind of problems that I had with the book, which is, you know, the scientism, the arrogance, the sort of narrow-minded thinking. But basically, a lot of the reviews weren't particularly kind to it, mainly just because some of the book's central claims are either just factually wrong in the sense that they're just not true, or they're inane to the point of not even being relevant. So the thing that's really important about thinking about the book is that in my essay, I sort of go through and I explain what are four of his big concepts.
Okay.
And the first one is that he's sort of breaking the spell, and we'll get into what that means. Like, you know, breaking the spell is so revolutionary. It's not. that religions are memes, which I think is the most controversial part of the book, which is also wrong. Belief in belief, which I think is the most interesting part of his book, and I think probably partially right. And then what we should do with religion, the sort of what, to use Lenin's phrase, what is to be done, right? What is to be done?
Okay.
And so essentially what I say is, you know, Breaking the Spell isn't a bad book, but it isn't much of a good book either. And so one of the so let's sort of break these down. And what, before I get into that, basically what inspired me to read this book was I had had it on my shelf for years. It was one of the first books I ever bought when I started working at Books A Million in 2009. And that was like peak of my, you know, new atheist asshole phase. So like I, you know, and so I had read The End of Faith. I had read Letter to a Christian Nation. I had by Sam Harris. I had read The God Delusion by Richard Dawkins, and I had read God Is Not Great. The only one I had never read was this one. Okay. And I was sort of like a completionist, which I don't know if that makes me admirable or glutton for punishment. I really don't know. But so let's start with his first claim, which is that what he's trying to do is that what we need to do as a society is break the spell of studying religion scientifically. This is like one of his big claims he makes in the book.
Okay.
He's like, he basically says that, let me see. Let me try to find a quote of his where he kind of makes this point. Let's see. Here's what he says. So it is high time that we subject religion as a global phenomenon to the most intensive multidisciplinary research we can muster, calling on the best minds on the planet. Why? Because religion is too important for us to remain ignorant about. It affects not just our social, political, and economic conflicts, but the very meanings we find in our lives. For many people, probably a majority of the people on Earth, nothing matters more than religion. For this very reason, it is imperative that we learn as much as we can about it. That, in a nutshell, is the argument of the book. Now, here's the thing. That's not necessarily a bad idea. Like, that's not wrong. But there's nothing about, there's no taboo about that.
No, like, no, that's right.
And so why is it such a taboo? And I basically make an argument going back at, I'm not even talking about ancient philosophy or history. I'm just saying going back at least to the Enlightenment, to the 18th century, if we go back at least to the 18th century, there are philosophers and writers who are already doing this.
Yeah.
And two of them, he actually quotes in the book. One of them is David Hume. the Scottish philosopher who wrote Dialogues Concerning Natural Religion. He talks about a natural history of religions. So there's Hume. And then in the 19th century, it's William James. In the early 20th century, it's the Varieties of Religious Experience, which is his large psychological and anthropological study of religion. And I basically lay out a point of saying that, like, there are numerous scholars who've done exactly what he's saying we need to do, the kind of spell we need to break. Right. It's not really taboo to study religion scientifically, or at the very least with reasonably, right? Like a rational discussion about religion. Yeah. So I literally lay out like a whole list. So there's Thomas Paine's The Age of Reason, Immanuel Kant's with Religion Within the Limits of Reason Alone, Feuerbach's The Essence of Christianity, Robert Ingersoll, this guy right here, who I wrote my entire master's thesis on. He wrote 12 volumes, which are right above me, mostly critical of religion, using science and history to debunk it, including his most important, Some Mistakes of Moses, which is his criticism of the Pentateuch. Karl Marx and Friedrich Engels in the German Ideology. Ulrich Marx, his critique of Hegel's philosophy of right, where he comes up with the phrase, religion is the opium of people. Lenin, I've written about Lenin, socialism and religion. I have a whole essay on that. Sigmund Freud, totem and taboo. Taboo is literally in the fucking name. And then basically, additionally, scientific researchers such as Pascal Boyer, Andrew Newberg, and Scott Atran have all done research into religion, which Dennett references in the book. So his central thesis is pointless. What the reason that he's doing this is because what he really wants is when he says breaking the spell, what he really means is we need to just study religion with evolutionary biology and basically yell at people and tell them that all religions are viruses of the mind, which is what he believes and which is what Dawkins believes, which is bullshit. And we'll get into why that's bullshit. But that's the first central problem with his whole book, is that it's not like studying religion scientifically or reasonably is a good thing to do. And I don't think that's a problem. But to say that there's like some kind of spell over people that just precludes them from studying religion is just not true. You're only really talking about a very narrow subset of people who are religious fundamentalists who are not comfortable with it. Because there are swaths of religious people who are either very comfortable with science and they're very uncomfortable with having their own individual religious beliefs, which they put sort of on, they put in one place. And in the other place, they discuss like the roots of religion in terms of evolutionary biology or sociology or history, right? He's only really bitching about fundamentalists, which is funny because he's kind of a fundamentalist in himself because he basically clings to a theory that's a dead theory that's been long dead. And that's the subject of memes. But before we get into that, I figured I'd pause. And if you have any like further questions.
No, I think he pretty much covered everything that I could have thought of. Like you say, it seems obvious that people have been studying religion and it's not like some big thing that, you know, nobody's allowed to look at it. Like, but that was a big talking point in the New Atheism thing for a long time, is that we're doing something that nobody is allowed to do. We're against the grain, right?
Which is so funny. And that's the point that I try to drive home in my review, which is that like, he is a tenured professor at one of the most prestigious universities in the country, Tufts University, where he runs a department on cognitive science. The book is published by a major publisher, which is Viking, which is Penguin.
Yeah.
Now Penguin Random House, because they merged. And it was on the fucking New York Times bestseller list. So there's like, and all of the New Atheist books were like this.
Yeah.
So I think what they did was they hit the zeitgeist of the time, which is why this book feels very dated.
Right.
Is that it? People yearned to find some kind of reason to sort of justify their atheism, which is fine. Like, I think if you're like young, like when I was young, because I think I read The God Delusion when I was like 19. I think I read God's Great when I was like 19, 20, 21. Like, I get it, right? Like, I can understand a young person reading those books and getting something out of them. I understand.
For sure.
But they're kind of elementary. And the big problem I have with Dennett is that like I said earlier, when he's not making points that are just so obvious, like breaking the spell, like it's fucking obvious. Like, people have been doing this forever, and your book isn't that revolutionary. It's one of many books that have done this topic. In fact, your book was one of two that came out that fucking year, because 6 months later, The God Delusion came out.
Right.
And he fucking quotes the end of faith in the book. So it's like, dude, like, you're not as revolutionary as you think.
No.
Like, you're not that radical, you know? So that's really the huge problem. The second problem with the book is that everything boils down to fucking memes. And we'll get into what that means.
Okay.
So I'm going to preface this with saying memes do exist, okay? In the sense that they're like funny graphics with like grammatically tortured phrases and funny images. Like, those are real. Those actually exist, and they actually go around and are popular, right? Those are real. You know? Yeah. I don't have any problem with I Can Has Cheeseburger. That's not what I'm attacking here. What I'm attacking is what Dennett believes, which is taking the meme concept way farther than it was ever intended to go, in that memes exist in the sort of anthropological, natural sense. That memes are essentially the cultural counterpart of genes. And genes do exist, right? Like, they are very much real. They make up who we are. But Dennett's claim is that not only are there memes, not only are there genes, they're actually memes that exist in the wild, that are real, tangible things that go from people to people, and they kind of have a life of their own. This is not true. It's fundamentally not true. And the problem with what he calls them, culturally based replicators. So they have, he sort of sees them as being like having a life of their own. So it's like languages, fads, songs, and even religions are memes, according to his conceptualization. This essentially is counter to another biologist, one I actually really like, named David Sloan Wilson, who's written a much better book on this subject called Darwin's Cathedral, where he talks about the concept of group selection. Okay. And in the eyes of people like Dennett, because What you're going to learn throughout my review tonight is that Dennett is basically Dawkins's bitch. So, like, anything that Dawkins believes, Dennett also believes and will fight to the end for it, right? And so, which is why I think it's also instructive to see recently, and I do want to make this point because this is relevant, that the American Humanist Association recently just revoked Richard Dawkins' 1996 Humanist of the Year Award for his racist and transphobic comments.
Yeah.
And true to fucking form, because, like I said, Daniel Dennett is to Richard Dawkins like Lindsey Graham was to John McCain, in that he comes out on Twitter and defends Dawkins.
Of course.
So, and trying to, like, you know, hem and haw and, like, let's look context, whatever. So, but anyway, so that's what religions are. But group selection is a phenomenon in biology where basically the unit of natural selection is not the necessarily the individual species, but it's actually a group within that species, right?
Right.
This is something that Wilson has written about. This is something the late Stephen Jay Gould proposed, Richard Lewontin, a bunch of other folks have written about this. For people like Dawkins, who's more of a sort of neo-Darwinian, the object of selection is either the individual or actually it's the gene. And
right.
And so they don't think that group selection is true.
Okay.
I think that it's controversial, but in general, I think the group selection is true. I think you're a good case for how religion was an adaptation based on group selection. Darwin's Cathedral by David Slow Wilson is a good exposition on that.
Okay.
So, so what is it like? So basically my problem with memes is that he kind of Dennett grants them a power that I don't think they have. So like, what does it mean for a meme to benefit? Like, how does a meme benefit? Cause so for example, like religions are sometimes can be harmful, but then people believe them anyway. So does that make them beneficial? I mean, that's the problem. So like, the whole thing that Dennett goes throughout the book is he uses the question cui bono, which is Latin for who benefits. And he talks about how religion is sort of a meme that benefited human societies that sort of grew over time. Now, the problem with that is, like, I think some of that's true. Like, I do think that the development of human religion, of religions within humanity did actually, I do think on a sort of anthropological, historical, evolutionary level really did elevate us, right? Because it's earlier versions of science or history or understanding helped us learn how to conceptualize things, how to do a bunch of, so like some of that's true, but the idea that it's like memes that sort of bore into people's minds and have lives of their own is just not true.
Right.
Think about any time anybody wants something to go viral and they intentionally do it and then it doesn't. So it's it's all up to caprice, right? Because humans are making the choices. So like,
groups of humans are really unpredictable in what they will attach to and what they like, what they like. I mean, sometimes I think of a real world example is that the people who started like QAnon, there was multiple instances of anonymous accounts claiming to be insiders in the government over and over and over and over again over the years. And then one finally took hold. Right. Like it wasn't like they could manipulate this idea and, you know, make it go viral and make it into a movement.
Yeah.
It had to be, you know, within the culture and like all these other things, all these other influences had to be part of it.
Yeah. And I think the problem that Dennett has when you're thinking about his concept of memes is that he sort of, and this is something I just sort of thought about now and I didn't put it in my essay, but it's something I think it's important, is that he often like, instead of thinking of things as being sort of random, which I think certain things that catch on, who the hell knows why they do, because they just kind of do, doesn't necessarily mean that they have a certain level of determination or like there's a certain agency to it. It just means like some things catch on, some things don't. And it's kind of the chance. And again, like the bigger ontological problem, to use a big fancy word about like the nature of being in philosophy, like on a pure ontological level, you can't prove that memes exist, but that up to this point, people have not been able to actually have any evidence to suggest that they exist.
Right.
And it's sort of,
it's almost a non-falsifiable claim.
Yes.
Which in any other instance, even Dennett would reject.
Yeah. which is kind of funny, which is why I said earlier that he's kind of a fundamentalist, because he still believes in this shit well after people stop thinking of it as being a serious scientific concept. There's only two major scholars who still talk about the concept of memes on that level. One of them is Daniel Dennett, and the other one is Susan Blackmore. That's it. Nobody else does. And there's a reason for that, which is because the science was bad. So I did.
Right.
So I basically went through and did a lot of research from, there's a really great journal called Perspectives in Science, which is published by MIT. And they published a couple essays that I read that are really instructive for understanding the meme part. The first one was by Radim Chavaha, who's from the Levnya Laboratory for the Experimental Research of Religion at Masaryk University in the Czech Republic. And he wrote a 2020 comparative study, basically looking at two major themes about cultural evolution that have caught on over time. One of them was memetics, which was Dennett. And the other one is called Gene Culture Coevolution, or GCCE.
Okay.
And long story short, GCCE is the one that actually has scientific evidence to support that it's real, and memetics does not.
Okay.
and most scholars in the field accept GCCE, and they reject memetics. And then this is a note that I make too. One interesting note that I found both interesting and hilarious was that in 2004, 2 years before this very book was published, Breaking the Spell, the Journal of Memetics, the premier journal in the field, folded. It ended. And the reason why, in its final issue, its editor, Bruce Edmonds, said that they admitted that the science of memes lost the competition with other evolutionary accounts. So,
okay, so it's just, like you say, it's just not evidence, supported by evidence.
Yeah, and yet Dennett still clings to it, right? And so if it's complete nonsense, how did this catch on? And this is where I think it's instructive to be a leftist, because what do we do as leftists? We look at the material forces of society and how they shape culture.
Right.
If you want to know why memes caught on, you have to understand the context in which they came up, which is that they were originally written about in the early, like in the conception that Dennett created in the early 1980s and really caught on in the 90s. Well, what's going on in the 80s and 90s? It's neoliberalism. It's Reagan, Thatcher, Clinton, it's Blair. It's the atomization of society. It's treating everyone as selfish individuals, right? The head of Enron literally called The Selfish Gene by Richard Dawkins his favorite book.
Right, yeah.
So it's really important to understand that that's the context in which this stuff builds up. It's an ideological justification for the ways in which individualism has superseded any concept of communal understanding or collective understanding in our culture.
Right.
And that's why memes caught on. The other important part, and there was an article that I read also in Perspectives in Science, published in 2012 by a science historian named Jeremy Berman. And what he laid out, and the short answer is that the concept of memes that Richard Dawkins originally came up with in The Selfish Gene was never, ever intended to be something that became a real science. It was a narrative device for him to describe to people the object of selection being the gene. And he used the meme concept that he came up with as a metaphor. Memes are a metaphor. That's what they are. Yeah. And that's fine. If you use memes as a metaphor, that's fine. But they're not a real thing. Like, not in science. They're not a real thing. So how did they become a real thing? Well, it had a lot to do with Daniel Dennett. In 1981, he and a mathematician named Douglas Hofstadter published a book together called The Mind's Eye, which was a collection of philosophical essays. In it, they published an essay by Richard Dawkins on memes where he formulates, I'm going to put that in quotes, the science of memes. Now, what's instructive about this? The way that they got the chapter that Dawkins wrote, quote unquote, was they actually took sections from The Selfish Gene and other parts of his works, and they basically mashed them up together and moved them around to create this Frankenstein's monster of science writing to justify what they thought.
Interesting.
And so they deliberately misled people about what memes are and made a whole science based on a fundamental misunderstanding of Richard Dawkins, or a fundamental, I'm trying to figure out, like, deliberate misrepresentation of his work. So,
right,
that's awful. Right. When I figured this out, I realized, like, Dennett is a hack piece of shit who,
yeah, that's no good.
Who will basically warp what people have written to justify what he believes, which is hilarious considering the subject of his book, which is religion. He basically created a religion, a scientific religion. And it was all in sort of tortured amalgamations of language from Dawkins that had very little to do with any empirical evidence.
Wow.
And so that just drove me insane. I know we're getting close to the 30-minute mark, but basically there's so much wrong with this book. But basically, memes are not nonsense. They're not real. And you shouldn't, and Dennett's whole entire, like, philosophical project's built on them, which means that a lot of his work is just nonsense. I mean, in general, it just is, you know? So I'll try to cover the next couple of things briefly. So, like, belief in belief, I think, is the only okay. So belief in belief is the only part of the book that I think is worth anything. I think it's kind of an idea that is interesting, which is this idea that people don't believe in religion so much. They don't believe in God so much as they believe in the belief of God, meaning that, like, people believe that belief is in and of itself a virtue. There's something to be said about that, which I think some of that's true. The big problem with that whole concept, even though I think it's great, is that basically you have to become a mind reader to figure out what people actually believe and don't believe.
Right.
So when he says they don't really believe, they believe in belief. He doesn't actually empirically know that. Like, he just doesn't.
Right.
That's an opinion of his based on people's perceptions. Now, we can say that. And in my article, I even make a point of saying, like, sometimes you can figure out if someone's believing in belief, whether they're bullshitters, right? Like, it's like a politician or, like, you know, some evangelist or whatever, you know. But anyway, like, it's something you can empirically prove, but it's an interesting concept in and of itself. So that's, I think, the most interesting thing. And essentially, I make the point of saying that, like, there's nothing about dedicating yourself to a belief system that makes you a better person. Just because you're a religious person or not doesn't make you a good person. You can be terrible and be religious. You can be terrible and not religious. And I basically make the argument that I think this world would be a lot better off if we judge people more on their actions than their intentions or justifications. So it's kind of just saying, like, you know, we need to pay attention a lot less to what people say and look at what they actually do, which is what I think we as leftists do, right? When we hear some claptrap from the U.S. State Department or the CIA about us democratizing, we're spreading democracy, right? Or, like, you know, we know that's bullshit, right? Like, we know they're not telling the truth. There's a fundamental difference between what they say and what they do. And I think that's a good thing to believe. I think that's a good point.
Yep.
The last thing I'll mention is he sort of talks about what we should do with religion, like what we should do. And I think the most egregious thing that he makes a point of is he comes up with this idea of that we need to develop, like, a department. He basically says, you know how we have, like, a Department of Health and Human Services in the United States, like a Department of Health, Physical Health? He's like, well, we should develop a Department of Cultural Health. And my first thought was, like, what the fuck do you mean by that? Essentially, there's a lot of problem. I mean, who gets to say, you know, he basically says we need to develop a Department of Cultural Health that can inoculate people against bad ideas, right? And, you know, who gets to decide what we need inoculation from? Government bureaucrats or democratic systems of knowledge? How will the inoculation happen? By classrooms or concentration camps? I mean, treating ideas as scourges that need to be eradicated recalls all the horrifying excesses of the 20th century from Nazism to Stalinism. This concept of cultural health is undemocratic, anti-human, and shouldn't be taken seriously.
Yeah.
And the last thing I'll leave you with is basically that despite how, quote unquote, nice he is, there are times in the book where he can't help but be a smug prick. So there's this point, there's literally, like, within the first 50 pages of the book, he basically pleads with his reader, please read me. Like, please read the ideas I'm trying to get across.
Okay.
Please hear me out. Give me a fair shot. Right. And he's saying this in the context to religious fundamentalists specifically.
Okay.
He's talking to them. He's talking to people who are religious who might take umbrage with some of the ideas that he has.
Right.
The problem is that he says, like, give him an open mind on page 53. But two pages earlier, he says this: history gives us many examples of large crowds of deluded people egging one another on down the primrose path to perdition. How can you be so sure you're not part of such a group? I, for one, am not in awe of your faith. I'm appalled by your arrogance, by your unreasonable certainty that you have all the answers. I wonder if any believers in the end times will have the intellectual honesty and courage to read this book through. It's really hard to ask readers to have an open mind when mere paragraphs ago you fucking insult them. Yeah. Like, now look, like as secular people, maybe we agree with a part of what he's saying there.
Right.
But you have to understand the context in which he's writing that, which is that he's asking people to give him an open mind while he then proceeds to be a smug prick about people's religious beliefs. It's like, can't do that, man. Like, if you want people to actually listen to you, you can't insult them. And he does this throughout the book, which I find absolutely ridiculous. And I'll just leave it with my last sentence of my essay, which is that Breaking the Spell, if it's remembered at all, will be remembered as one book among many others that tried to explain religion away and ultimately failed. And that's it. It's a shitty book. It's a polemic that is parading itself around as a serious scientific investigation of religion. Now, I have no problem with polemics. I love them, right? And the one thing I will say about people like Sam Harris, Dawkins, or Hitchens in their books is at least is they're a little bit more intellectually honest than this one is in that they are polemics. They make no bones about it, right? Yeah, they are angry, full-throated, polemical books. This one tries to parade itself around as being like this sort of like objective understanding of religion when it's just as polemical as the other ones.
Right.
And so it's a crappy book. You shouldn't read it. don't waste your time with the new atheists.
One star, half a star.
So it's two stars.
Two stars.
Two. Okay. Because I think it's well written. It is very well written. When he covers good science in it, he covers it well. He doesn't misrepresent it. And it was readable. Like I could read it. I didn't hate reading it other than the bad ideas in it. So I'll give it two. It's not end of faith bad in that it's not overtly racist. Although there's some like white man's burden shit in the end of the book that I didn't get into tonight. But it's just not very good. And I think for those on the left who are skeptical of religion, who are secularists, obviously you are because you're listening to this or you're interested in it, right? There are much more interesting people to read to get a sense of what these guys are trying to get through. So there's somebody like Martin Haglund, who's a philosopher. He's written a book called This Life, which is about secular humanism and democratic socialism. Two of my heroes are people like Corliss Lamont and Eric Fromm, two Marxists, humanists. Who were critical of religion, but then also had a materialist socialist view of the world, right? So there's lots of cool writers out there who do what Dennett's doing far better and far more interestingly. So yeah, two stars. Don't waste your time with it. The new atheists are trash. And if you're interested in just sort of learning more about the phenomenon, I think there's an essay by Luke Savage at Jacobin called New Atheism, Same Old Empire, where he basically goes through and lays out how these guys are mostly just justifying the status quo and that they're imperialist tools. So good stuff. I know I went a little long, but there's a lot of ground to cover.
Right.
And yeah.
That's perfect. Thank you so much for this episode's book review. Do we know what we're covering next time?
Not yet. I'm trying to figure out what I want to do. Maybe I'm trying to think. Oh, actually, yes, I know what we'll do next time.
Okay.
Next time we're going to be covering a book that is a socialist critique of the media, but it's not the one you think. We're going to be covering Inventing Reality, The Politics of the Mass Media by Michael Parenti.
Okay.
Which came out 2 years before Manufacturing Consent, which most people know about.
Yeah, almost everybody
knows. Which is also a book in and of itself. Yeah. But we're going to be covering Inventing Reality by Michael Parenti. That'll be the one we'll do next time.
Awesome. So where can people find your content?
Sure. So if you're interested in reading more of my anti-Dennett screed, you can go to justinclark.org. My full essay is called Daniel Dennett's Breaking the Spell 15 Years On. I have a bunch of other essays up there as well. And then if you're in the States, I highly recommend you get involved in DSA, Democratic Socialists of America. I am I'm the political education co-chair for Central Indiana DSA. So if you're in the Indiana area, hit me up if you're interested in learning more. And I always say, And I encourage people to read however you can. So if you like reading a paper book, you like reading an ebook, you like audiobooks, however you are going to read, always read, because reading is one of the most important things you can do. And in fact, I would argue it's probably one of the most revolutionary acts you can do. So read, and but don't read this crap that we talked about.
Just don't
read
this
my essay on it. There's my shameless plug.
There you go. Right on. Thanks.
Thank you.
That's all, folks. Thanks for listening. Remember to share this show with your friends and on the social media site that you use the most. Thank you to everyone who supports this show on Patreon. It's really appreciated, and it helps me spend more time on this and my other projects when I'm not at work so that I don't have to work as many hours at gig jobs. If you want to contribute, you can do that at patreon.com/skepticalleftist, or you can send me money on PayPal at paypal.me/brainstormpodcast. If you can't contribute financially, then a 5-star rating and a review on your podcast app of choice or one of the podcast review sites like Podchaser would be great. If you want to find more from me, then make sure to check out my Linktree at linktr.ee/skepticalcorey. You can find all my social media stuff there, as well as links to my other shows, which include Skeptarchy, which is a panel show I do with some very smart people, and From Many People's Strength, which is a podcast about Saskatchewan politics. My Twitter is @SkepticalLefty, and my Facebook page is The Mind of a Skeptical Leftist, or you can send me a friend request at facebook.com/CJBrainstorm. I accept most friend requests. You can also email me at themindofaskepticalleftist@gmail.com. Thanks again for listening and or watching, and remember, the truth leans left.